All right, here we go. Reggie, thumbs up. Good. Levels look good in here. Well, actually, put it a little, yeah. Just, yeah, did you see how it was just, was a little too much in the red? You wanted a little in the red, but not that much. Now you're okay. I think that's the first time I've actually said levels were not good. But I saw you were on it. I saw you were on it. So that's why you're here. Okay, so now we're ready to go. And yes, thumbs up. Talent is ready per usual. So let's do it. This is episode 167. 167. Write that one in the books. And we will get started here with the three S's. Star, smile, strong. And we will say 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Welcome to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure here. The only podcast that has received numerous good podcasting seals of approval. Welcome to episode 167, which can only mean one thing, that if you go back to my landing page at WGNplus.com, go to the entertainment section and hit the Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic prompt, you will find 166 previous episodes. Enjoy those as we continue our weekly dialogue of interesting, fun, and informative topics from whatever this brain is of mine. Hope you enjoy the podcast on a weekly basis. I certainly enjoy talking to you, and I always appreciate the feedback that I get. They're also posted every week on my Facebook page, which you can find by just going on to Jim Toronto, T-U-R-A-N-O, or Elton Jim. It's also on the WGNplus.com website and other places that you find your podcast. I did have a topic that I wanted to talk about today, but I actually started talking to Emily Arminetti, our regular pop culture guru for the Pop Culture Club, and our conversation got so interesting and fun that I wound up doing the entire hour with Emily, which is always fun. And we touched on a couple of interesting topics, mainly about the influence and the resurgence of the 80s. Thanks to the popular show Stranger Things. So, next week, I promise I will tell you about a very sad event that took place over the last couple of weeks in my life, and I want to share it with you. And I will do that, I promise. But today, we'll have a little of 80s nostalgia fun. So, without further ado, let's just take a walk over to the Pop Culture Club with Emily Arminetti. And now we take a stroll to the Pop Culture Club and join regular contributor, pop culture guru. I'm going to give her the masculine rather than the feminine introduction because, you know, this is a world of female empowerment.
Yeah.
You don't want the feminine guru-esque title. You want the masculine, the general accepted one of guru, right?
Yeah. I don't even need it. I don't
right,
need it.
Right, exactly. You don't, you're not a comedian. You're a comedian.
Right. Well, okay. Well, I wouldn't go that far.
You're not an actress. You're an actor.
Right.
Right. So there you go. So I wanted to talk today about an interesting phenomenon that I've been noticing over the last, I would say, well, maybe at least 2 or 3 years. Are you a Stranger Things fan?
I'm not, but oh, wow. I mean, everyone I know who watches it swears that, you know.
Have you ever tried it?
Yeah, I did watch the first couple of episodes, like right when it first came out, and it was, you know, it was this huge hit. And I think I was more like interested in the Winona Ryder aspect, like seeing her back, you know.
So then let me, before I get to the main topic I wanted to talk about, then let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So now this is the, at least the second, and there may be more hidden ones that you're not, you know, comping to. But now this is the second TV phenomenon,
yeah,
at least on record, and perhaps I would say maybe a third, because you're still not finished with Breaking Bad.
No, I am. I finished Breaking
Bad. Oh, you did?
I'm not up to date on Better Call
Saul. Oh, right. Oh, Better. Well, okay, that's fine. I mean, that's still going on. But you were slow to the party on Breaking Bad, correct?
Very. I just finished it like last year.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know when it was on. I don't even remember when it was off.
I kept having to tell my dad, like, don't tell me what happened.
And you're already on record as not being a Game of Thrones fan.
No, that's never going to change.
Yeah.
I will never watch Game of Thrones.
So now.
And by the way, you will especially never get me to invest time in watching that now that I know that the final season was not up to par.
Right, yeah.
There's no chance of that happening now.
But so now this is interesting, considering that you're kind of a child of the 80s, at least that's when you came into your own, you know.
For sure.
Kind of awareness of things. And so Stranger Things comes along, and it becomes this instant must-see hit. And I have to say, I have been slow to the party. In fact, I have only in the last 2 months saw the first season.
Well, to be fair to you, though, you were really slow to the party with Netflix.
Right. I didn't have Netflix. But my point is, when I got Netflix a year and a half ago, the first thing I didn't do was watch Stranger Things. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
Which is kind of surprising. You probably should have.
Yeah, I was surprised at myself, because that was, you know, one of the impetus for getting it. One of the driving forces was, my gosh, everybody keeps talking about this Stranger Things, even though I was a little skeptical, because what I was reading about it seemed to me, what it was based on and what a lot of people were making comparisons to the show, were not really in my wheelhouse. You know, I think there's a lot of revisionist history that is going on in the last 10 or 15 years about what was popular and what was a hit and what was beloved. Uh-huh. Some 20 or 30 years ago, from those of us who were there and remember when these things came out, and they were certainly not popular, they were not successful, and they were not
beloved. What do you mean, for example?
All right, for instance, if you read any kind of pop culture magazines or any blogs or any of these other bullshit, you will see.
Did you just say a curse word?
It's the internet.
What?
You can say that word.
Oh, I thought you did.
I did.
I was
say
like, "Ooh, I didn't know we were allowed to curse."
I did say
this.
It.
Is this a cursing podcast? I don't know.
But all right, BS.
Okay.
You know, the John Hughes film Weird Science, for instance, was a huge flop. And it was practically responsible at the time for John Hughes's career to almost become non-existent. The guy that did, that created such hits as 16 Candles and Breakfast Club was a huge, huge, you know, Pretty in Pink was a huge force in the movie world in the 80s. But when Weird Science came out, it was such a flop that people questioned whether John Hughes was even relevant anymore. Now,
it's funny you should say that, though, because it's one of those things, and I'll try this. So it's one of those films that, I mean, I guess I never realized that, you know, that it was like a box office flop. However, for my generation, that movie is like a total cult classic. You could say the same thing about Heathers. You could say the same thing about True Romance, you know.
Yeah, but my point is it's being elevated. I mean, that movie was such a flop. It was, as I said, I mean, whenever you say cult classic, right away, you know, that intimates that
Sure.
It was not popular, that there was a small niche. But when you read now people who like that movie, they make it sound like it was a defining moment of the 80s.
Yeah, and I'm totally one of those people.
Yeah, and it wasn't.
For me,
it was not.
It was like...
No, it was a huge flop. Huge flop. And it's not a joke. It's just, look, it made no money.
I get it.
Huge flop. There is a remake now that's coming on one of the, I don't know if it's Amazon or Netflix, there is a Jim Henson film in the early 80s called The Dark Crystal.
Oh, I love that.
Okay, now here we go again. The Dark Crystal almost bankrupt Jim Henson's entire empire. It was a complete flop. No one, the reviews were terrible. No one saw it. No one knew what it was. It came and went in 2 seconds.
It is very weird and creepy, I have to admit.
But now it is being remade, and it is being, and I saw it described in Entertainment Weekly as the beloved Jim Henson. Now, I'm sure that this, you know, the people that are writing this are in their 30s or early 40s, and they may remember this when they were a kid, and so to them it was something that they remember from their childhood, but it was not beloved at the time. It was not an epic. It was not something that has been popular for the last 30 years. It was popular by a very small niche of people that are waxing nostalgic on it, but now, because those people are in charge or are vocal about it, it's completely rewriting history. There's a film with David Bowie, another Muppet film called The Labyrinth.
Labyrinth,
horrible flop, unbelievable flop, almost killed David Bowie's career.
I do remember that, and I remember that one.
Yeah, and now
that was like him and like Jennifer Connelly, right?
Yeah, and the Muppets, horrendous flop.
And the Muppets.
Yeah, they're in it. Yeah.
No, I know. It just makes me laugh that anyone ever even created a movie with David Bowie, Jennifer Connelly, and the Muppets.
Yeah, the Muppets, and again, a huge flop. Almost destroyed Bowie's career again. And now when you hear the Labyrinth mentioned anytime, it is in the most esteemed terms, as if it is one of the greatest films that was ever made, and it was the biggest hit. And most of these films were not. Now I'll give you another one, and I'm sure you're going to go, what are you talking about? The Goonies.
Oh.
The Goonies was a flop.
You want to know what? That is... DVR, that is on my DVR as we speak.
All right, go.
Because I want to get James to watch it.
All right, go look at the box office receipts for the Goonies. When the Goonies came out, it was considered one of Steven Spielberg's first flops ever.
Oh, I don't even think I knew that was a Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I don't know if he directed it. I know he produced it. He may have directed it also, but his name is associated with it because, and the reason I don't know is because it was so insignificant and such a huge flop at the time that it didn't even bother to go on my radar screen. And now when you mention the Goonies to a certain age group, they're like you, gushing that this is the greatest film ever made. However, when it came out, it was not a hit at all. So there's a lot of revision, and I'll even go further. I mean, I just saw this story online about, Freddie Mercury. We talked about this before, but, I mean, it's getting to the point that it's getting ridiculous. Freddie Mercury and Queen were not popular in the 80s. This movie has rewritten history, and the people that are not around and don't know think that Freddie Mercury was the biggest star in the world for his entire career. Simply not true. The reason that Queen, if you watch the original footage from Live Aid, they're on at 3 p.m. on Live Aid. You know why? Because they hadn't been heard of for about 4 years.
Right.
They were not popular. There certainly, you can't deny the impact of that performance. But even after that performance, they didn't go on to become the number one band in the world again. They put out a couple of albums that flopped again.
But I do think in the film, they do give you a sense that not that they weren't popular, but that they kind of slowed down and they weren't really performing.
But
and then
if
they
you're
kind of
reading,
came back together for a live.
I understand that. But if you're looking at the reactions of people now when they are thinking of Queen and Freddie Mercury, they are thinking that he was. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because there's a story. I think it was in some British newspaper that were comparing, you know, Elton John to, you know, to Freddie Mercury because of the.
Mm-hmm. The
films. And basically this person says that Freddie Mercury is a rock legend and Elton John is a hack. And he says, well, because Freddie had a career that never stopped.
Mm.
And in his short, you know, in his death, you know, only, you know, stopped. When Freddie Mercury died, it was a blip. And I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm just telling you the facts. When he died, it was a blip on the radar screen. The pop culture world did not come to an end and did not even stop for a second when Freddie Mercury died. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm just saying is that he was not this beloved icon like Frank Sinatra that now he is being ordained with. And there's a lot of revisionist history going on.
Just a side note, by the way, right now I'm picturing you sitting at a typewriter, like typing a very strongly worded.
I am. Well, I was thinking of doing something this. Because it was so ridiculous. And I'm like, you know, even when Queen was at its apex,
yeah,
they never came close to matching. And this is what's sad, and Elton does a bad job on his own of marketing his past performance. There was no bigger star in the world from 1972 to 1976 than Elton John. Seven consecutive number one albums. Seven consecutive number one albums. Few people have done that in their lives. Queen never did it. Okay, so let's. So, okay. But my point is,
I remember probably maybe more like in the early 90s. I do remember certain Queen songs.
I'm not denying Queen was like, very popular and very very popular, very successful. Don't get me wrong, but Freddie Mercury's image has been completely elevated and somewhat overblown.
Well,
in the last 10
you
years.
Know why that? I mean, that happens to a lot of people after they die.
I understand that. I'm just saying is that there's a lot of revisionist history, and to get back to my original point. So when I heard about Stranger Things came out, I'm seeing references to people making reference to, oh, it's like the Goonies and things like this. And I'm sitting there going, well, I didn't like the Goonies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in my early 20s, maybe 20 or so when it came out, which would make sense anyway.
Right. I mean, you were a little bit.
I was a little too old for
that. That was more like my.
Right. I get it. You know. But my point is, so I wasn't all that hot to seeing it, you know, to begin with.
Right.
Just because I was like, well, if it's a Goonies kind of story, that's really not my thing. But then, you know, the second season came out and everybody keeps talking, blah, 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 blah. So then when the third season came out just this July, then that's. I decide, okay, I need to get on the, you know, on the bandwagon here. And but the other side of the coin is, we binged in one day, the first season, and yet now it's been over a month and we haven't gone back to watch two or three. So I don't know.
So you're not exactly.
I'm still not crazy about it, but I'm glad. But my question to you is, being someone who's so you know into the pop culture world here. You have been on the sidelines for at least three that I can count, and God knows how many more there are that you're not even, you know, copping to. You know, three major pop culture of, you know, event kind of phenomenons and TV shows in the last 4 or 5 years that you have not been in. So what has it been? I think I asked you this question before. What's it like living when you're not a Game of Thrones fan in a Game of Thrones world? So I guess my question is, what's it been like living in a Stranger Things world when you're not in that world?
Well, I mean, the Stranger Things is not, first of all, I mean, you can't even compare the fanfare for Stranger Things to the Game of Thrones. I mean, anyone who watches Game of Thrones is like obnoxiously, was always like, you don't watch Game of Thrones. Stranger Things fans are not as like, you know, I think there's, it was, the Game of Thrones was a much bigger deal to people. But that said, I mean, with Stranger Things, like, whatever. I mean, I watched the first few episodes. I liked the 80s, the look back to the 80s. You know, I like nostalgia. I get nostalgic for those days. My dad always tells me, you can never go back, Emily. But yet I still can't help myself, you know. But, you know, I think for me, and I was really happy to see Winona Ryder kind of making a comeback, because I've always thought she's a great actress, but she kind of had some rough years there. And I don't know, though. It's like the thing in the whole child abduction thing, which, of course, as you know, and anyone would remember if you were around then, there was a huge deal in the 80s where suddenly, like, people became aware, like, oh, my gosh, someone could just, like, kidnap my kid,
right.
You know, if I turn my back for
right.
2 seconds, because there were a few really high profile kidnappings back then. And that became like the world was a different place. It wasn't as innocent. It wasn't as safe as it once was. So they had that element in it. But it was like the sci-fi stuff right off the bat that I just it turned me off to it. And so.
Right.
You know,
and I'm not a big and that's the thing, too. I'm not a big sci-fi fan. And so once again, I wasn't drawn to it. I kind of said, let's just see what this is all about.
Yeah.
When I did finally watch it, while I was intrigued enough by the first couple of episodes that I watched, I was intrigued enough to continue watching the entire first season.
Right.
I did wonder, as the first season episodes were coming to an end, I did wonder, how is this continue? How I know already that there is a season 2 and 3 while I'm watching the season 1. And I'm saying, well, how is this going to go on, because it seems to me that the main mystery is about to be solved here.
Right.
And so I'm interested to see 2 and 3 just to see where we've gone. But I'm also wondering how they've also had to maybe go off into different areas, because the main mystery was solved by the end
right.
of the first season.
Right.
Now, when
But of course, it's like with Big Little Lies. When something is that popular...
Oh, yeah, you know it's coming back.
Even once you've reached the end of the road for the story, it's like they can't help themselves.
Oh, yeah.
They have to go back. They just it's like you get your writing team together, come up with another season.
I was just wondering what direction they would go, because, as I said, they seem to have, solved the mystery.
Right.
When I did watch it, I was... even though I was intrigued enough to stay with it, even though, as I said, I haven't been driven to immediately binge on the next 2 seasons, I couldn't help but notice not only the similarities to Goonies, but the similarities to a host of other 80s films.
Right.
Like E.T. and Firestarter and certainly Stand By Me.
Yeah.
To the point where there's even a scene where they're walking on a railroad track. And I thought
I think they do things like that intentionally.
Well, I understand that. Well, see, so this is my point. This is the big point that I wanted to talk about today. So what I'm finding interesting now, when this show and not only did it make, you know, little cookie references to the 80s with literal references, as well as clearly the influence of the show, and even written to feel like it and filmed to look like it. In fact, what's interesting, and it's been 3 years, so spoiler alert. There's a season, the kids are walking down a railroad track, and I expected them to start singing Lollipop, 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 because that was right out of, Stand By Me. But then even one of the episodes, every episode starts, it says, chapter 3, chapter 4. Well, the interesting thing is one of the episodes is called The Body.
Right.
And The Body is the name of the novella that Stephen King wrote, which Stand By Me was based on.
Right.
So there's even a deeper reference there, and I'm sure that wasn't done by accident either. So everybody was talking about the 80s references and the music and the look, and they got down to it so much that, in Stranger Things, at least season 1, the kids are obviously the smartest people in the world.
Right.
And the parents and the adults are the dumbest, the most unaware, the most superficial, and just dim-witted things on Earth that they're so inconsequential, they're barely there. And if there is an adult who is featured, he's evil.
Right.
And that basically
it's
was...
like Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, yeah, like Ferris Bueller, exactly. Or like every 80s movie.
Right.
Or certainly like, you know, in E.T., it was the parent, it was the adults that were the mean people.
Right.
You know, the adults and that shady government. We never really knew what they were doing. And it was always just, you know, shady people. And that's kind of like what Matthew Modine is, you know, and that when it was funny to use Matthew Modine, who became a star in the 80s.
Right.
So that was even more of an 80s connection. But what I'm so everybody was you know,
well, and by the way, Winona Ryder was too.
Certainly.
Right?
Because yeah. But I'm just saying, Matthew Modine was like a teen. I mean, he was like a right in that, you know, sweet spot, like in his early 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just like Jed Nelson and all the rest, you know, at that time. He made a lot of those 80s movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I know Winona Ryder was around in the 80s, but I'm talking about more of the early 80s.
Right.
You know, in mid 80s. And so, yes, so all of a sudden, everybody's waxing poetic like you, the nostalgic. Oh, the 80s, even though it's so funny. Is really when, for most part, when we are making our 80s nostalgia references, it's really about 2 years of the 80s.
Okay.
That everybody is making the most reaction to. Because I got news for you. The early 80s was not all that great. I was there. I was 16. That was my wheelhouse, too. Everybody goes, oh, well, you know, it wasn't your era. Well, it was my era.
Right.
I was 16.
Oh, yeah. Of course it was. If
yeah.
you were anyone
yeah.
in that kind of.
Yeah. So I was certainly, you know, it was my era, too. But what's so funny is that the beginning of the 80s was not all, you know, happy-go-lucky with all the new wave, you know, music. And poppy music and big hair and, you know, polo shirts and alligator shirts with the collars up or the five-layered shirt look or the little white, you know, socks that the girls would wear and the Madonna look. That didn't come until about 83 or 84.
Mm-hmm.
And really, by 87, that was gone. If you remember... And some people don't, but by 87, then all of a sudden, everything kind of changed. You know, the new wave and the music of that era, that poppy kind of British new wave music, was kind of giving away. And that's when all of a sudden the boy band started.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
like,
well, they're boy band, but there was also a lot of, you know, what I remember being kind of big then, too, was like that... glam rock, like, you know.
Yeah, but that was like I'm saying, that was about 84. I was about 84 to like 87, because then in 87 the stock market crashed, the economy fell down a little, then we had Iran-Contra and things mm-hmm. changed again. In the early 80s we had Reagan and you know, and they were going to blow us up and the Cold War, so there's like a little sweet spot where all the 80s nostalgia kind of you know, just rests in the middle of the decade, which is fine, but I'm just saying it's so funny. So now you're seeing all the music come back and all these references. So of course, now once Stranger Things got popular, now to your point about, you know, then everything's got like sequels and everything else. Mm-hmm. Well, now every TV show and every movie has to have 80s nostalgia in it. And now we're seeing that to the point, I don't know if you saw this just recently, but a trailer for the new American Horror Stories came out.
Of course I've seen it, and I could not be more excited.
Yeah, here we go. Because it's right in your wheelhouse, and
it is right smack dab in my wheelhouse. And as you know, I'm already a huge fan of American Horror Story.
And
I almost feel
so
like they can do no wrong,
right.
But I am really looking forward to it, because I think where you're going is this, the theme of the next season, which is, I think, coming out in September,
right.
is like 80s slasher film.
Right. So
genre.
They, yeah. So they have like a, you know, a 30-second tease, and they've become known for, you know, giving these early teases to the to the next season. And so this is right out of Friday the 13th and Freddy Krueger and Halloween.
Yep.
And even though most of those all started in the late 70s, I mean, that's when Friday the 13th and Halloween both started in the late 70s. But they really became popular and became, you know, part of the pop culture world in the 80s with countless sequels. Even though they were all terrible, they were still very popular.
Yeah.
And the Freddy Krueger. So what you see at the beginning is a bunch of kids in the 80s with a bunch of the 80s, the new wave 80s music playing in the background. And they're in open cars singing and all excited. And they're going off to some wooded area. What's that?
They're going off to a summer camp.
Yeah, this wooded area, going to summer camp. I think it's called Redwood.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, while they're all excited, there's a slasher, you know, hidden under their car.
Right, right.
Who has a mask on. And so it's not a goalie mask like Mike Myers. And
goalie mask wasn't Mike Myers. Mask.
Oh, no, it's Jason. Jason, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so you're getting your slashers.
I'm getting my bad slashers wrong. but he does have a mask on, and he does have the big knife, and he's hidden under the car. And if you looked in the back, there's a big sign that says beware.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I bet if you pulled his mask off too, he'd be deformed.
Well,
that's
the Mike Myers, Freddy Krueger thing. Yeah. So it's going to be very interesting to see. But my point is that you know that once the popularity of this 80s nostalgia and the Stranger Things happened, that right away, that's when the creators, including Gwyneth Paltrow's husband,
Brad Falchuk,
and Ryan Murphy, said, okay, we know where we're going next season.
But I also think there's something to be said for, I think there is a cycle, and I do think that the people who were growing up and coming of age during this time, when they become the content creators and the showrunners, you know, they're dipping into their favorite time, and I think that's that's definitely a wave that they're probably riding right now. But I think it makes sense.
It makes sense. But my point is that there's been how many seasons of American Horror Story, which they easily could have done. I mean, that's been in their background for the last 5-6 years, but they never tapped into it. Why are they tapping into it now? They're tapping into it now.
Hey, by the way, there's another trailer that was released for it, like a teaser, not a trailer, a teaser. And it's a very short clip of like various characters that are going to be appear in the season in their like wardrobe. They're in like a camp, like a bunk room, like you would have at summer camp.
Right.
And they're like trying on, I mean, they're showing like the wardrobe, which is like classic, stereotypical 80s stuff. But this track that's playing in the background, and I could not love this more. Remember that Dan Hartman song, I Can Dream About You?
I could dream about you.
Just like the perfect. And I love too that they chose like a really upbeat 80s song for this, even though this is like a dark slasher, like someone's about to get killed.
Oh yeah, no. I have no doubts that this is going to be filled with some right on 80s references. I have no question, because as I said, the guys that are putting it together are my age.
Yeah.
And so they, like I said, I know every reference, believe me.
Right.
That was my time. Even though I was in my 20s, and then, a lot of times we all refer back to our teen years as that kind of the most nostalgic time, because it was when we were becoming our own and we were getting more aware and we were beginning to, create our own kind of personality and our likes and dislikes. But still, in your 20s, it's still, that's your time as well. And so believe me, I'm sure that it's going to have every reference, it's going to have everything down. But I'm just saying, it's funny now how you're seeing the popularity of the way the 80s references came in Stranger Things, that now you're going to see more TV shows.
Well, there have been a few. I mean, like Glow is definitely, that's squarely in the 80s. And that focuses on a very specific time when like female wrestling actually became like a thing.
And that's when wrestling became.
I watched some of the episodes. I like Marc Maron and Allison Brie's pretty good in it. And the '80s stuff is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, well, like I said,
the big hair.
Yeah, well, that and that's going to be like I said. We're just going to see that more and more. Is like I said, they're remaking a lot of the '80s movies, or you're going to see a lot of the '80s actors come back. What surprised me though is how long it's taken, because usually, you know, it's about a 25-year thing.
Yeah.
You know? So I would have expected this to have happened maybe 5 years ago. It's a little...
Well, some things started. Like, that. The Americans was on for...
Oh, yeah, no. It's been there, yes. It's, you know, the 80s, it was the Americans was based on the 80s Cold War. No, I'm not saying that's been completely forgotten. And there's been in music, there's been a lot of 80s bands that have come back and done nostalgia tours. And last summer, you know, you had Culture Club and the B-52s. It's been there. Don't get me wrong. It's been there. But I expected it to be a little stronger than it was. But I think now, with the popularity of Stranger Things, it just goes to show you the power of television. Whenever you doubt it, it keeps reminding you. There is really the ability for television, especially in today's world, you know, to get into your home and now to get on your device. It really, you know, even films, which now we can all watch at home, but we can't really watch first run films unless we go to a theater. Mm-hmm. And radio back in the 40s and 50s, that was the dominant thing in the 20s and 30s and 40s. But my gosh, the power of television to come in your home and then affect you. And look at what the power of television did to R. Kelly.
Well,
I mean, R. Kelly.
R. Kelly. Yeah, I would agree with that, because I think anyone who has lived in Chicago in the last, like, 20 to 25 years has known that.
Well, he's been, but he went to court. He went to court and he was found not guilty. This is not even just living in Chicago. This is
what I'm saying is, I think people who lived in Chicago when it first came out that he was like, what back even before Aaliyah, he used to be married to that. Remember that singer, Aaliyah?
Yeah. And then she died
in a plane crash.
Yeah.
It came out way back then that she was like 15 years old when he married her.
But I'm just saying the allegations.
But I think people in Chicago kind of knew more about that stuff because he was based in Chicago. But now I think you're right with the documentary that came out, it came to more of like a national.
And my point is, up to before, when it was a court case or it was a newspaper story, there was an impact and an interest.
Mm-hmm.
But when 20 years later, these allegations have haunted him, there were even talks of videos that he had taken, but everyone didn't see the videos. The visual aspect is just so much more powerful to the human being. And when it comes into your home, because suddenly on that documentary, there were the women these same women gave testimony.
Right.
Years ago. And they were all not even taken to be true. There was all this skepticism. But when you saw their faces, look at the Michael Jackson
recent
documentary.
I mean, that for sure has had.
When you see people give their story, suddenly it takes on a whole different life. The impact of television, as I said, there's been 80s revivals, and there's been some music things, and there's been some, but when a show like, you know, Stranger Things gets into everybody's home, everybody has access to it, and there's 80s references, all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing on earth. And other people said, well, we've been talking about this for the last 10 years. Well, it doesn't matter if you're talking about it or if you're writing about it. It doesn't really matter until it seems that people see it. And when they see it, my gosh, it goes off the chart. So I would not be surprised in the next 2 years, at least, you're going to see regular TV shows on the network. I mean, don't forget, there's that show, The Goldbergs, which deals with the 80s.
Oh, yeah, I remember The Goldbergs.
You know, and that's still on. So that's completely in the 80s. But clearly, the Stranger Things phenomenon is now, you know, just made it so cool and so hip. And so I think you're going to see a lot of programming based on either old 80s shows. You're going to see a lot of old 80s. I mean, what would you say, Beverly Hills? That was more of the 90s, right?
Are you referring to The Niner?
Yeah.
That's what we call it.
Because that's
coming. Beverly Hills 90210. Because,
and what year was that?
So that came out, that was right on the cusp, I would say. That came out either in 89 or 1990, I would say.
So that's right on the cusp, but now that's coming back,
you know,
too.
I was going to say, get ready for the next thing, because you know what's coming next is the 90s revival. And I can tell you this, the 90s are already back fashion-wise. Everywhere I go, I see 20-something girls wearing stuff literally that it looked like they took it right out of my closet in the 90s.
Well, that's what I was saying, because what was funny, this is my point, is that I was seeing suddenly a lot of 90s references and influences starting to creep in. Mm-hmm. And so I was even saying to myself a couple of years ago, wow, you know, we really didn't, we almost jumped from the, you know, there was a 70s revival a few years ago. And I was like, we didn't really get a lot of 80s. It's almost jumped to the 90s, you know, in terms of the stars and the look, as you're saying. Usually it starts with the fashion, then it starts to go from there.
Well, it does. And actually, like, for example, a few years ago, neons were back, fashion-wise.
Yeah.
And I was like, here we go. Here's the 80s. But it was kind of short-lived.
Yeah.
And like I said, the 90s now are back in fashion. Now you have stuff like this reboot of Beverly Hills 90210, which is, you know, right there. It's like 80s. It's like right there on the cusp of 80s to 90s.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's going to be, like I said, so I was wondering, because I was saying, like, wow,
actually,
the 80s.
Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, because that Niner reboot, that's coming up. It's like coming up at the end of August.
Now yeah.
I'm suddenly realizing, wow, between that and American Horror Story coming in September, August and September are looking really good for me.
And so, yeah, I mean, I thought the 80s were getting the short shrift of thrift of things, but now it's like, wow. But you will see the 90s definitely become more prominent. But I'm just getting a kick out of some of the revisionist history, and there was, and there's no question that, as I said, that sweet spot of like 83 or 84 to about 87, 86, 87. There was a 3 or 4 year little gap there where the economy was humming. The MTV took hold. You had Thriller, and MTV, and then the whole British New Wave, and you had, you know, so you had all the synthesizer bands and Duran Duran and Phil Collins and Thompson Twins and that whole thing. And then, of course, you had David Bowie. You know, then a lot of the 70s stars actually became bigger stars in the mainstream than they were in the 70s.
Yeah.
And that really, from my standpoint, everybody says, oh, the 80s were filled. You know, if you really want to say who the biggest stars of the 80s were, yes, there's no question. There was the Thompson Twins, and there was Boy George and Culture Club and Duran Duran and things like that. But at the same time, most of the 70s bands became legends in the 80s. As I said before, we talked about Queen, but David Bowie had his biggest thing. Queen had their biggest, you know, with a little thing, crazy little thing called Love.
Uh-huh.
That was their biggest. You know, Elton had, it was very popular in the 80s as well. But you had, you know, a lot of, you know, Dire Straits was huge with, you know, Money for Nothing. They were a 70s band. The Police became huge. They were the biggest band in the world in the 80s.
Yep.
With Synchronicity, but they were a 70s band. So that was the funny part, too. As much as they're always defined by kind of the new wave, it was also the rockers from the 70s came into their own. But there was that sweet spot from about 3 or 4 years where if there's 80s nostalgia, that's where it seems to come from. Because everybody was just kind, there was a period there, everybody was kind of happy.
Well, and I think here's the thing, too, because it's true what you say. Like, some of these shows, like Stranger Things, has been criticized in some ways for looking back through somewhat rose-colored glasses, because they do show some of the things that people were going through in the 80s, but they totally gloss over certain things, like, you know, things like casual sexism or homophobia or racism, you know, stuff that was really real and in a small town in the 80s would have actually been going on. And they just sort of gloss over that aspect.
Well, you know, once again, there's been never in the history of man, there's no such thing as a good old days. There have never been any good old days. Because whatever good old days you remember, we can also point to, just as you're saying. I mean, don't forget, Ronald Reagan was president from 1980 to 1988 and never once uttered the word AIDS.
Right.
Okay, so that was just a scourge on our entire world, and yet it got very, very little attention for almost a whole decade.
Right.
And so, yes, there were, and if you say to people, oh, look how great the 70s were. Well, you know, there was Vietnam, there was inflation, there was Watergate, and there was racism. Oh, well, the 60s were so fun. Well, there was segregation, there was no civil rights, there was the Cold War, there was almost the Cuban Missile Crisis, we almost blew each other up. Oh my God, the 50s were so great. Well, you know, in the 50s there was the Korean War, and there was institutionalized segregation in many cities where people couldn't even go to the, you know, couldn't drink out of the same
water fountain
or go to the same bathroom. So no, there were no good old days.
Right.
There were moments in time. But the good old days were little flashpoints, little snapshots. And that's the way this is. I think that when you look at 80s nostalgia, it's a snapshot of those years where the economy was good. And remember, too, if you look back, you know, the 90s kind of started slow. But once again, if you look at the high point of the 90s, it was probably, say, 94 to 98. Another four-year period where the economy was rolling along. It was the introduction of the internet and the entire, www.superhighway.
The information superhighway?
Yeah.
Hey, I loved those years. Oh, I was half in college.
Oh, believe
those
me.
Years,
oh, yeah,
half,
no. No, no
college,
one, no one prospered more
no
than me. Yeah, no one prospered more than me during those times. But my point is,
amazing.
But when you think of the 90s, it was a 3 or 4 year period, and then all of a sudden, when the tech bubble burst in like 99, then things got bad again, and there was unemployment again. So my point is, there's always been some good times, within a decade or so, but at the same time, our same lingering problems have always been around as well. And so,
well, you know, you got to take the good with the
right,
bad.
Right. And so, but to your point, what you do find is when there is this nostalgia, there is that there will always be the points when we will look back and say, oh, well, look how great it was. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go, well, let's peel a few layers of the onion back. Yes, there was some really fun moments there. And like I said, you know, when MTV, I mean, that was really, people today can't even really understand it unless you were around for it. But the advent of cable television and MTV in the mid-80s was a revelation, almost as big as the revelation of the internet in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, but the irony is that today, if you put on MTV, I don't even think there's any music on it anymore.
No, well, that's why, I mean, you know, today.
I mean, I don't even know what they broadcast anymore.
You know, and today, for MTV to even have the video awards is ridiculous. You know, they still have the VMAs, but it's nothing. There was a time when everybody did know every video.
Oh, of course.
And it was important. And if you remember, there were world premiere videos with Kurt Loder.
Oh, yes.
On MTV.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That Kurt said Loder. Thursday, MTV world premiere video. I mean, they cut into the broadcasts. You know, we are going to have the MTV News with Kurt Loder and world premiere video. I mean, this was a big deal. When Michael Jackson put out, you know, Black or White or some kind of a new video, this was news.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact of not only that, but just the idea that we were living in a 3 to 4 station world. on TV. There were three or four places.
I can't tell if you're trying to convince me that these were not good times or they were, because now you've got me thinking it was like the greatest decade.
Well, no, I'm just saying there were, you can't, like I said, there's that sweet spot.
Yeah.
Where it was that from, it, you know, even though cable television been around and MTV officially started, you know, in the early 80s, it wasn't until about 83 or 84 when cable really went across the country and every major city as well as rural city had it. Because Chicago was very late to the game in getting cable television, actually. People don't know that. But Chicago proper, the city itself, the suburbs had it, but the city itself did not have cable right away. And I never forget when I first got, hooked up to cable. I mean, the first thing I turned on was MTV.
Oh, yeah, of course. I definitely have, like, they're fuzzy, but I have, because I was young, but I have memories of when we got that first cable box.
Yeah, because it was amazing, because we were used to literally having CBS, ABC, NBC, and maybe Channel 32 and some of those.
Yeah, what was Channel 32? That's what I was trying to remember.
Well, that that's WFLD. That's WFLD. That's, you know, Fox now.
Oh, okay.
Locally here. And, you know, if you had your antenna the right way, you can get 26 and 44. but that was always fuzzy.
Yeah.
You know, WSNS was Channel 44, and the White Sox games used to be on that. That's the only reason anybody knew that. And Bob Luce Wrestling. But, you know, and so when all of a sudden this box came into your house and you just kept clicking it and there were shows on every time you clicked, there was another show on. It was like the world was like, oh, my gosh. And it was almost as if like the impact of the Internet to say, oh, my God. And a few clicks on a few, you know, keystrokes on a keyboard and look at this information I'm getting. So yeah, there's no question that there were some warm and fuzzy times in the 80s where everything was just, you know, everything was hitting on all cylinders. There's no question about that, and that's what you see most, portrayed when they do the 80s nostalgia. But I'm just going to be wondering to see now how long the 80s nostalgia continues. To your point. Without bucking up against the 90s nostalgia that is dying to take over.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah. But so will you? You are definitely going to watch American Horror Story.
Oh, without a doubt. And you know what? That is a show that I watch in real time. I do not. If it sits on my DVR for a day or two, it's only because I absolutely could not be home, and you know, because I it's one of my favorite shows on television.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some good seasons. I don't think there's ever
even
been
the seasons that get criticized. I still find things that I like about them.
Yeah, I mean, there haven't been a bad season. There's just been some seasons that haven't been as good,
some better than others. Yeah.
I still don't think they'll ever. Sadly, though, I have to say that first season was so good. It really just was different than anything else.
Yeah, Murder House. Yeah, it was. But I think there have been.
Oh, so what would you say?
I think there have been seasons, but I've enjoyed as much.
What seasons do you think were other good ones?
Well, I really liked Coven, but I think you have to like an element of camp to like Coven, right?
Yeah, right. It was very over the top.
It was very over the top campy.
When they did the whole Stevie Nicks thing, I thought they went a little overboard.
Yeah, a little bit. But I tell you what, the actress who was really into her, Lily.
She's great.
What's her name's daughter? Jill. Her name's Lily Rabe. But her mother was an actress. No, I can't remember. Yeah, she was. She, you would know her. I can't remember who her mom is.
I didn't know she had a famous mom.
No, she does. What is her name? She's dead. She died like a couple of years ago.
I didn't know.
Jill. Now I'm gonna go on the information super. Jill Clayburgh. Remember Jill Clayburgh?
That was Jill Clayburgh's daughter?
Yes, that's her daughter. That's her daughter.
And you know what? Now that you say that, she does look like Jill Clayburgh.
Yeah, I'm blowing your mind right now, huh?
Oh, my God. I never knew that.
Yeah. So
Jill Clayburgh was huge in the late 70s.
So I think even though the Stevie Nicks thing was a little over the top, she managed to pull it off. But I thought, like, Coven was good. I really liked the election season. What was that one called?
I didn't like that at all.
You didn't?
No, I didn't like that at all.
Oh my gosh, I thought Evan Peters was outstanding. Oh, and even Hotel, like, I thought that was the one with Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
I thought she was over the top. I didn't love her in it, but I liked that season a lot.
Yeah, that was interesting. There was some interesting. Yeah, this will be, but I mean, this one now, it starts on September 18th, I believe. And
Cult. That was the one about the election. Yeah. Cult.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about that.
Oh, gosh. I just thought, like, Evan Peters was just so good.
Oh, no, he
so
was compelling. Good, but I just thought it was very preachy.
Yeah, it was certainly very political, yeah, for sure.
I just thought it was very...
I mean, obviously biased.
It was very preachy. It was very one-sided, and it's fine, but I just felt like, you know, you're really pushing one agenda here and one viewpoint, and it was almost like, you know, hey, I've got this TV show, so I can get my... You know, I could hide my political views through this fiction thing, but they didn't really hide them very well.
But I also think that season, and here's for me again something that maybe makes me like certain seasons over others. It's like when I heard that the season was going to be about an election, I thought to myself, like, how on earth are they going to do an American Horror Story? You know, like in the way that we're used to seeing it. And have that as a theme. Like, I just couldn't. So I feel like, I guess I was impressed in general that they could come up with ways to make a season that was election themed. You know, I just, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well,
like,
what's going to be
just
interesting.
Impressed with how they, it just, it was so like, it was just such a different way
well, and
of
I,
looking
and
at
I believe
it.
This, you know, to my point, when, you know, about 84 to 87. If I do remember now, I'm just remembering this. This season is called 84.
Yeah, it's 1984.
It's AHS 84. So actually,
oh,
I forgot.
Okay.
I forgot about that, but it falls right into my theory. So I've actually been validated because it was 84 to 87, 88 was pretty much the sweet spot of the 80s, and I guess my only fear with the new American Horror Story that's going to be based on the 80s slasher films is there's a thin line between satire and parody and then just copying. You know what I mean?
Right. And yes, so, totally.
Yeah. And so my fear is, and what I've seen so far of these little snippets, it looks like they're getting it, but that's because, you know, it's only 30 seconds. So my fear is that it doesn't become a cliche. It just doesn't filled with so many references and becomes cliched. Because what's interesting about American Horror Story is always the twist. And they what's kind of cool is that they have the same stable of actors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's even taking place here. I haven't heard about any.
They
of
do.
The same.
I mean, they have more or less. It's the same.
But I don't know. Is any? Do you have?
Same
you,
group.
Have you heard and, who's? Have you heard who's in this one though?
Well, I mean, I think Emma Roberts is really the main character in this.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, like, so this is the thing that I think I'm a little concerned about for this season. Evan Peters is going to be the first time he is not in.
Oh, he's
American
not in
Horror
it.
Story.
Oh,
he's
wow.
one of my favorites, and he is not going to be in this season. He's already confirmed that. And I think Sarah Paulson, they're saying, if she is in it, which she may not be, and she has been a central
right.
character
yeah.
in everyone except for Murder House, really, where she was kind of a
right.
she was kind of like a you know peripheral character.
Yeah.
But she, if she is in it, they think it's going to be like a really small role. So, but Emma Roberts, who's been in a handful of seasons, and I really like her. I think she's great. There's going to be some newcomers, but some people who have been in kind of that Ryan Murphy universe. So I think Matthew Morrison, who was one of the stars of Glee, I think this is going to be his first time on American Horror Story.
Well, because now you have to remember, I mean, you know, some of these people are getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah. What's her name? Billy. Carrie Fisher's daughter, Billy Lord. She's been in the last few seasons. She will be one of the main
yeah,
characters.
I mean, you know, there's, you, know, you can't really have, you know, if you're going to do a teen slasher thing, how can you have Kathy Bates?
Right.
You know,
right.
how can you have Jessica,
Jessica Lange.
Jessica Lange. You can't really have those. How could you have Dylan McDermott? How can you have, what's her name? Britton. What's her first name? You know, she played the wife.
Connie Britton.
I mean, you have some of these people that are there in their mid-50s, almost 60. You really can't have them around. It's sad to say that, but if you're doing a slasher, you know, a kind of a teen slasher thing, don't forget, Friday the 13th is where we first, you know, one of the first things where we saw Kevin Bacon. Nightmare on Elm Street is where we first saw Johnny Depp.
Yes. Oh, yes. And yeah. I did not go unnoticed in my house.
But, yeah, so it's going to be very interesting to see where the 80s nostalgia, you know, how much they can get it right and how much they can give us without us getting a little overdosed on it, as we said before, with the 90s nostalgia just knocking on the door, ready to take over as well. And then for me, that's going to be very interesting because then I am not going to get all those references. And it's not the first time that I'm going to feel out of it because I've felt out of it for many years already. But when we get into a lot of the 90s nostalgia of pop culture, I feel that I'm going to be a little left out.
Interesting.
For the first time. I'm going to get some of it.
I'm here for you.
Because I was in my 30s. It's not like I was an old guy.
I know.
But at the same time, the music wasn't speaking to me as much as it used to. I was never a big fan of grunge. I was never a big boy band fan. Well, I wasn't a big fan of Janet Jackson. You know, and so all those big 90s kind of things were really not in my wheelhouse. So,
well, if you need anything explained, I am here for you.
You are the new, you will be my thesaurus.
Right.
Or my dictionary. Yeah, exactly. Well, that we will see. I can't wait for to see what American Horror Story is going to do if they do this right or if they get a little too heavy on the cliches. But there's no question that thanks to the popularity and the phenomenon of Stranger Things, the 80s are back. Not sure how long they're going to last, but for the time being, they are back. And speaking of back, we will talk to you when you come back next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Emily. And so that ends another episode, number 167 of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure. So thank you for downloading, clicking, scrolling, whatever it is you do to find us on a regular basis. Your loyalty is much appreciated. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Totally.